It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning May 10th, 2024. I'm going this week to continue my theme of Europe and the growing threat from the far right. When it comes to wide-ranging analytical publications, I have frankly never been as great a fan as many Americans are of The Economist, that magisterial London magazine that adopts in its mostly unsigned, anonymous articles a superior tone of knowingness. I have on occasion had cause to go further than saying superior, and call it supercilious. But The Economist has undeniably just beaten others fairly and squarely and accomplished a journalistic coup, a scoop, a major sit-down interview with the President of France, Emmanuel Macron. The President had clearly swallowed or was just ignoring stereotypical Gallic pride and deliberately chose to send out his message to the world in an English-language medium. And what a message it was. It followed hard upon his speech to the Sorbonne University, when he shocked many with his cry of alarm. "Our Europe can die," he proclaimed. The Economist understandably called their subsequent interview with Macron resolutely bleak. The magazine contrasted the current Macron with his ebullient self, the youngest person ever to ascend to the presidency, when he took office 7 years ago. I quote what they said to him. "In 2017, your trademark, so to speak, was optimism." The interviewers were unnamed in the magazine, but in reality they were Sophie Pedder, the paper's Paris bureau chief, and its deputy editor, Edward Carr. Macron claimed to be still an optimist, but he was out to stress the threats he sees with realism. The biggest, most obvious threat to Europe overall is, of course, Russia and its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. But Macron also vehemently condemned the internal threat to Europe, his own France included, from what he called nationalist populists, or populist nationalists. He switched the words around interchangeably during the interview. In France, of course, he faces an electoral threat from the party called National Rally, led by the rightist Marine Le Pen. The Economist asked him, how exactly could such right-wing forces be stopped? He answered with, by being bold enough not to think that their rise is inevitable. What distresses him, he said, is, in France as in Europe, the spirit of defeat. The spirit of defeat means two things. You get used to it, and you stop fighting it. That notion, the spirit of defeat, is critical here, I'd say. There's a striking moment in the interview when he tells his audience what they should be reading. He was describing his efforts to fend off the advances of Le Pen's National Rally Party, and he suddenly exclaimed, "As you can see, I'm fighting. We have to fight. Read Marc Bloch." Actually, in full, he said, "Read Marc Bloch again," as if we've all read that French historian already, at least once. And Marc Bloch's writing, indeed his entire remarkable life, is inarguably very instructive. And for modern times especially, as Macron was insisting. Bloch was Jewish, fought in World War I, gaining citations for bravery, and when World War II reached the point of a Nazi takeover in France, he was inevitably persecuted. He then joined the underground French resistance, even though he was by then well into his 50s. But the Gestapo, under the notoriously brutal Commandant Klaus Barbie, captured and tortured him, finally killing him by firing squad. It's a scene recorded by two witnesses who miraculously survived the shootings. Bloch, as the oldest condemned man, was comforting the youngest, a 16-year-old boy, telling him the imminent shots would not hurt. And just before he himself was struck down, he yelled out, "Vive la France!" The foundation set up to honour his memory has always called him historian and man of action. They posthumously published his most profoundly argued book, Strange Defeat. Defeat, that word Macron kept brandishing as a warning. Bloch's treatise explained, on various levels and from various angles, why the Nazis were so easily able to take over France in 1940. It wasn't just military effectiveness. Long before the war, he argued, French society, or its leaders, facilitated the country's collapse by a combination of short-sightedness and complacency. You can see why Bloch appeals so much to Emmanuel Macron. Often during the interview, the president would broaden his ringing of the alarm from purely France to all of Europe, saying at one point, "Around the table in Europe, there will always be at least one leader who is either from the nationalist populist camp or is frightened of the populist nationalists back home. And America is definitely not left out of Macron's worldview. How could it be?" I quote, "We must not underestimate the deep internal crisis which America's society, that great democracy, that economy, is going through. And I'm not underestimating it because it's the same one we're experiencing, even if the U.S. is, if I may say so, in the vanguard." Following his clarion call to the rest of the globe via that leading magazine of the English-speaking world, Macron this week went on to play host to Chairman Xi of China. That country was reported in this same week by a satellite TV news network to be once again meddling in the Western world systems by, on this occasion, hacking payroll operations of Britain's armed forces. But Macron's concerns about China centered more on economics than potential espionage or sabotage. In advance, the president told the Economist some of what he would be telling Chairman Xi. Mostly a call to cool down the trade war that has been hotting up between China and Europe. But he did not tell the magazine what formal diplomatic gift of goodwill he was going to present to Xi, which robbed the writers of their chance to indulge in some of their publications' typical know-it-all smart-aleckness, which I will admit clears the way for me to indulge my own inner smart-aleck. China's recent hostile economic tactics have included opening a so-called investigation into Europe's alleged dumping of exported brandy onto the Chinese market at unfairly low and state-subsidized prices. Here, European brandy largely means French cognac. Financial journalists have universally interpreted this Beijing investigation as a tit-for-tat in response to the EU investigating Chinese subsidies for electric cars and digital medical equipment being sold in Europe. So about that diplomatic gift. With wry Gallic wit, perhaps, Macron gave his Chinese counterpart a highly prized example of distilled French spirit. Thanks to the Associated Press news agency and not to The Economist, I can pass on the knowledge that President Macron gifted President Xi with, of course, the very best of cognacs, notably the sought-after Louis XIII by Rémy Martin. This particular tipple is named after the 17th-century king who reigned over considerable French expansion across the rest of the world. By that I mean in North Africa, Morocco, in the Americas, Acadia, and operating from the northern French port of Dieppe, the infamously rapacious trading company that was granted a royal warrant to economic control throughout the Far East. On that Orientalist note, that's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.